This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. A few nights before Marcel Teeburg was arrested by the Gestapo, he huddled with friends in the loft of his local church. By candlelight, they sang masses that Teeburg had composed. Teeburg was part Jewish. He was arrested and later died in Auschwitz. His music and legacy also disappeared, but in the late 2000s, Teeburg's work was rediscovered, and a team of artists, including Duke Chapel organist Christopher Jacobson, have brought his work back to life. The four-time Grammy-nominated album of Teeburg's compositions is called Teeburg Masses, and Christopher Jacobson joins me in the studio now. Christopher, welcome.
Thank you so much.
Tell us what else we know about Marcel Teeburg, Austrian composer. What do we know?
Austrian composer, an incredibly soft-spoken, introverted gentleman who didn't seek fame or riches or earthly possessions, but he lived in his own world of music swirling in his head. And these two masses are the only surviving works that we have from his sacred output, but he did write three symphonies as well.
And did he have much of a reputation? We'll talk about his arrest in a few minutes and, of course, perished in Auschwitz. But had he much of a reputation up until then?
Yes, he was a fine violinist and a fine pianist and had already begun to establish himself as a composer, but mostly amongst his friends. And he declined many opportunities to have his compositions published. He just enjoyed them himself, mostly.
He was part Jewish, 1/16th.
Yes.
Yet he feared, rightly, it turns out, that he would ultimately be arrested.
Yes, yeah. His arrest didn't happen until the very end of the war, when the Germans started becoming more desperate. And he was mostly left alone. But, of course, the story goes, before he was arrested, he sang these masses and played them at the organ with his friends one final time. And he was taken away very shortly after that.
So tell us about the works that are on this album.
They are two settings of the Mass text, the traditional Catholic settings of the Kyrie, Gloria, Credo, Sanctus, and Agnus Dei. But these two works are quite different in the sense that one is composed to be quite simple and easy. In fact, it's called the Easy Mass. And it could be sung by almost any church choir. The other is another setting which is quite a bit more robust, longer, more complicated, uses the organ in more complicated ways and to achieve different musical colors and textures.
And that would have been perhaps a concert setting, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Easy Mass certainly could be done in the context of a service, in a liturgy. The G major Mass fits perhaps more so in the concert setting.
So let's just take one step back and talk about this fairly long history of composing composing masses and pieces for the Mass. Tell us about this particular genre.
Choral masses, of course, have been composed for hundreds of years. And before they were sung, they were, of course, spoken in the church. And it was not uncommon in early Catholic circles and early Catholic churches to have masses sung by the priest first as solo monotone Gregorian chant. This, of course, evolved into harmony, and then it was sung by choirs in the Church of England. And today, most masses are sung by congregations or just spoken, if at all. And so at the time Teeburg was living in the early 20th century, masses were sung primarily in church.
Right. And, of course, there was great sponsorship in earlier centuries, the 18th and 17th
that's
century.
Right.
You could get paid for writing one of them.
That's right. The big, long ones, Mozart, Haydn. Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk a little bit more about this particular Mass that we're talking about, because Teeburg did take some steps to protect his work. He understood what was going to happen to him.
Yes. He sensed that he would be arrested. And after he sang and played through these masses the final time with his friends in the church loft, he entrusted all his compositional works to a great friend of his, who unfortunately perished in 1948, just after the war. But this friend then entrusted these works to his son, who then moved to Buffalo, New York, who was a doctor in cancer research. And these works languished for several decades until he began to uncover them and realize that these works need to be brought to light and performed again.
So what did he do?
So he started approaching different conductors. First of all, going back to Europe, the conductors of the orchestra that Tiberg knew decades before. And there was great interest there, but unfortunately that conductor passed away and the project fizzled. So Buffalo Philharmonic and Joanne Folletta picked up the symphonies in 2008. And that's how this momentum began.
So first they picked up Tiberg symphonies.
Yes. Yeah, the masses didn't come to light until later through the recording of the symphonies. And these masses came to Brian and myself, Brian Schmidt, the conductor of the choir, and we looked at them and immediately saw the beauty and power within this music.
What do you think it was? Well, let's talk about the symphonies for a moment, then we'll come back to the masses. How do they rate on the scale? I mean, in terms of composers that we know in the tradition, where would Tiberg stand, do you think?
Well, Tiberg comes from a long tradition of writing orchestral works, and of course the symphonies are part of that. His language, tonal language, when he's writing is late Romantic style, so he's taking his cues from great composers like Bruckner and Mahler, and the symphonies bear much of that same similar tonal language.
So, and they're going to sound melodic. They're going to be, I would say, pretty. Mm-hmm. In some ways,
I would say extraordinarily beautiful.
That's what characterizes that movement, I think, in that moment in music history. So now let's go to the masses. You see them. What caught your attention?
The organ and the choral writing is incredibly rich and diverse and lush, I would say. And it's one thing to write for a choir. It's another thing to write for an organ. The organ is, of course, a very complicated instrument with four keyboards and sometimes over 6,000-7,000 pipes. So be able to combine these two genres of composition successfully into a singular piece is no easy feat. And that was the first thing that I noticed about these works.
Well, I want to listen to a sample right now. The album that you worked on features two masses written by Tiberg. The first is the G major, the second the F major. Before I hear a clip, maybe you can tell us about the differences, or is that what you were just describing, those differences?
The G major is the larger mass. The F major is the more simple one. Yes.
All right. Well, we're going to hear now from some of the first mass. Let's take a listen to the credo right here. That is a part of the credo from Marcel Tiberg's Mass in G Major, performed by the South Dakota Chorale, one of the tracks from four-time Grammy-nominated album Tiberg Masses. And joining me in the studio now is Duke Chapel organist Christopher Jacobson, who is one of the people who brought this album to life. As I listen and think about what you said just before, the complexity of the organ and then writing for choral, it seems to me, and this is my limited knowledge of physics and sound, but as you say that, the idea that you're going to be in this place with a lot of reverberation,
yes,
all of these tones and overtones billowing over one another, does a composer have to take into account how much is going to be lost? The voices would be lost in those billowing sounds. Is that one of the things a composer has to think about?
They certainly can think about that as well, but really the managing of acoustics and that kind of thing is really left up to the performers ultimately. Because the clip that we just heard, we heard choral and organ juxtaposed to each other with organ interludes and choral interjections and that sort of thing. And so how we manage those sorts of musical logistics really is in the heat of performance, I would say.
Right. So yeah. That's what you gotta say. You gotta a little louder, yeah, a little right. louder. That's one way, yeah. I suppose.
That's right.
These were written at two different times. You're talking about the G major and the F major. Talk about when they were written.
Yeah, the G major mass written in the 30s, F major mass written in 1941. And of course, the beginnings of World War II were happening during both of these compositions. But we don't know exactly what Tiberg wrote these masses for specifically, presumably the F major for a church service, perhaps the G major for a concert, as we've talked about before. But there's nothing that's specific dedication-wise about these pieces.
Well, let's listen to a little piece of the F major now. That would have been the more simple
that's
version,
right.
the one that we
yes.
would expect perhaps for a church
yes.
a church service. This is from the Gloria. That's a bit of the Gloria from Marcel Tiberg's Mass in F Major, performed by the South Dakota Chorale, one of the tracks from the four-time Grammy-nominated album Tiberg Masses. And joining me in the studio is Duke Chapel organist Christopher Jacobson, who contributed to the album. So talk about the process of bringing these pieces to light.
Well, the first time that I saw these pieces, my colleague and friend Brian Schmidt introduced them to me, and we were sitting there in our offices at Duke and looking at these scores and hearing the music in our heads and reading about the story of Tiberg and his capture and death in Auschwitz, and immediately just began to hear the beauty in this music and how Tiberg weaves the organ writing in with the choral writing and how this music needs to be heard and how the different settings of the mass text, which we've heard so many times in different composers' versions, but I've never heard a setting quite like this before.
What sets it apart?
The incredible clarity of the text in terms of the setting that we just heard of there in the Gloria, glory be to God on high, juxtaposing the high voices of the singers with the incredible, rich, robust nature of the organ writing. Certainly just such a simple concept, but one that sometimes gets overlooked in the enthusiasm of composers, complexity of these little bags of tricks of composition and whatnot. But sometimes just keeping it simple achieves a fantastic result.
It's interesting because that would have answered one of the centuries earlier critiques from the Vatican.
Yes.
As the music became more complex. The Vatican claiming that this is becoming a matter of vanity and not glory to God, and therefore
That's
keep
right.
it simple.
Yes, yes.
Which
indeed.
Led to the joke that the Germans got all the good music because they were farther from the Vatican than the poor Italians who had to keep writing the same old stuff.
That's right. Yeah.
But so and isn't yeah. so? But this does that, and it's still beautiful. I mean, it's still something
That's
he
right.
could be proud of as an author, as a composer.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Tiberg, he uses many different textures in this music, and sometimes it's solo writing, sometimes it's solo quartet writing, as we heard in the Credo a few moments ago, just sometimes full on, full choir, full organ, almost battling back and forth in that Credo text.
Does anything come, you talked about reading the text and then hearing it in your mind. As a performer, when you play this stuff, are there any new insights that you had when you start actually playing this work?
Always. Everything. Yeah. I mean, you see the music and you hear it in your head, but until you start to really dive deep into it, when you start practicing at the organ or in Brian's case, you start rehearsing the choir on it and you hear different things coming from the singers or from the instrument. Your creative juices start flowing, and well, I could make this little bit on this on the organ sound a little bit more robust, or this a little bit more introspective. And like any artist, you're constantly tweaking and constantly evolving things. And that was happening in the recording sessions too.
What do we know about Tiberg's own scholarship? Was he a student of music, or how much of this had he learned?
We actually don't know much about his musical education, but we do know that he was a first-class musician and a first-class composer. And so he studied music with his father, but we don't know exactly where he went to music school or anything like that. But from his introverted personality and studious ways, and which we do know, he was an utter craftsman of music, both performing and composition.
How would you gauge the interest in his music now? Is it growing?
It's certainly growing through exposure of these masses. We performed 3 concerts of them before the recording in the Midwest, in Minneapolis, Sioux Falls, and Lincoln. We performed these masses here at Duke Chapel later that year as well. So
great stuff. Thank you so much for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much.
Christopher Jacobson is the Duke Chapel organist. He helped resurrect compositions of Austrian Marcel Tiberg. The 4-time Grammy-nominated album of Tiberg's compositions is called Tiberg Masses, and you can find links to the album at our website, stateofthings.org. The State of Things is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Jennifer Brookland, Robert Kinlaw, Angie Perrin, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wodarski is on the board today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.